The NBA trade deadline's in 1 week, so Tom Haverstraw and I broke it all down. Giannis, Ja Morant, MPJ, and a bunch else. And then we also talked about AJ DiBanza, Darren Peterson, and this constantly improving NBA draft class. That's all coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We're live today on YouTube. Joining me, as always, on Thursdays, Tom Haverstraw. Tom, how are you?
Couldn't be better, man. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Getting over a little bit of a cold this week, but we'll power through it. Just too much to talk about in the NBA. The latest, biggest news this week, of course, involving Giannis Antetokounmpo. So let's start there with Giannis. Shams Charania said that Giannis is ready for a new home. He seemed to choose those words quite carefully. Later in the night, Chris Haynes said, well, Giannis hasn't demanded a trade actually yet. So, I mean, we're still here with does he not want to? But all indications are, as Windhorst said, I think this morning on ESPN, that Giannis is definitely ready to move on. It's just a matter of, are the Bucks going to find something ahead of the deadline on February 5th, Tom? And it's tough. It's tough to make big in-season trades, right? There's definitely a lot of challenges there. But first thought, Tom, when you saw this news, I'm sure it was no surprise, but what do you think comes next? Who is going to be the team that steps up here and makes something compelling for Milwaukee?
Well, first, it's about time. This whole flirting that we have been doing and just dancing around the elephant in the room. And we see in the report, it's so interesting, Shams Charania reporting that Giannis Antetokounmpo is ready for a new home. Not the same verbiage of a trade demand, but lower in his story, Shams Charania reports that sources said Antetokounmpo has informed the Bucks for months that he believes the moment has come to part ways. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this means that the trade request, trade demand, put it in quotes all you want, this has happened for months. Now, over the offseason, we had heard all the Knicks talk and that there was murmurs from Giannis's camp that he wanted out. No, he's reporting right here that this trade demand was made months ago. And so now what's different? Well, I guess it's louder than ever, his desire to move on from the Milwaukee Bucks. And I guess the second part of this is that the Milwaukee Bucks, for the first time, are seriously opening the trade market and putting him on the trade block for the first time. And the word aggressive gets thrown around all, you know, throughout this reporting, around this report. And I think this really, what this means is, come with your best shot. Like John Horst is saying right now, the GM of the Milwaukee Bucks is saying, give me your best offer. There is a timetable here that the February 5th trade deadline. If you don't give me your best offer now, I'm going to trade this guy to the highest bidder. And that might be posturing, but what we can see is from Shams Charania that the time has come now is the verbiage from Shams Charania. And I think this is a way to provide a sense of urgency, a sense of leverage for the Milwaukee Bucks, is say, get your offers in now. We might revisit this in the offseason if we're not happy with these offers, but get them in now, and maybe they will come to an agreement before the February 5th trade deadline. And as I said in the big number, which we recorded yesterday, live show, I think there's plenty of teams that have what it takes to get a deal done now. It's just a matter of whether they are going to put all their chips in the middle. The team that I am most interested to see what they do here is Atlanta, because of the fact they have that super first, and I'm calling it a super first, the first round pick that they have the most favorable of New Orleans and, yep, Milwaukee Bucks in this upcoming draft. And that, to me, might be the most valuable asset on the board or on the table in terms of if you've got a whiteboard and you're the Milwaukee Bucks, what assets or players do you think are realistic and draft assets that are realistic? And I think you got to put that super first where they can get the better of either New Orleans and Milwaukee on the table. And I think that with Jalen Johnson and other picks that Atlanta has, I think that could be the biggest swing factor in these trade talks, is whether Atlanta is willing to put that super first. And I'm not sure they are, but also the other draft assets and Jalen Johnson on the table. We heard Rich Paul say on his podcast at The Ringer that the Milwaukee Bucks should be calling for Jalen Johnson, and he suggests Jalen Johnson should be moved. And in a hypothetical for Giannis Antetokounmpo, what everyone needs to understand is Jalen Johnson is being repped by Rich Paul. So that's why that's super interesting.
They should, Tom. They should. The Bucks should be angling for that. But if I'm the Hawks, and this is the thing with teams like Atlanta, where you're not, if you get Giannis and you plug him onto your team, you're still not obviously contenders. Giannis only has a year and a half left. He's been dealing with calf injuries all year. He's on the wrong side of 30 years old. He's a tough guy to build around. I'm not giving up a two-thirds chance. That's what they have with the swap rights with the Pelicans pick or the Bucks pick. Currently, as the current odds are, a two-thirds chance of landing a top four pick in a historic draft potentially. And I'm not giving up that opportunity if I'm the Atlanta Hawks, Tom. And so ultimately, I think I would understand if they do. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's one of the 15, 20 greatest players of all time. He still has time left to win more championships. But I don't think the Hawks, unless they have a second move ready to go get another star, I wouldn't go for Giannis. I think Atlanta, a team like that, your Portland Trailblazers, I'm not like doing cartwheels at the opportunity to go get Giannis. To me, I think it's some of these veteran teams that are more ready for that final piece. That's why everybody talks about the Heat and the Knicks. But the problem with them, to your point, like there are teams, Tom, that can make a great offer today. I don't think New York or Miami can make that offer today. Miami, they can trade only two firsts today compared to four first-round picks in the summer. New York can trade no first-round picks today compared to two in the summer. And so, you know, like for Milwaukee, it's like, well, why would we trade you, Giannis, now when we could wait till the summer and shake you for more? And so I think it's got to be a surprise team a la Atlanta, to your point, a Toronto type, or the Golden State Warriors, who I reported last week that they were the team, one of the teams, waiting for Giannis to become available, holding up their trade talks and hoping for the opportunity to get Giannis. They are willing to put all their future picks on the table. They're willing to put Butler in there, Kuminga. They're willing to do that. I don't know if anybody is going to be able to top what the Warriors can offer unless somebody else gets really creative. Rockets, Spurs, Minnesota's mentioned this morning. We'll talk about the Timberwolves in a minute here, but I think the Warriors are probably the front runner, is the way I would put it, Tom, in the Giannis sweepstakes, considering the mutual interest, Warriors trying to make another run, Giannis-Steph relationship, and the quality of those picks that the Bucks could get. It just feels like all parties could be satisfied with Golden State.
Yeah, you mentioned that trade option last week on this show, right? Is like the Jimmy Butler package with Jonathan Kuminga. I think you mentioned JK would be rerouted to Portland, the Blazers in that scenario. But if you're Milwaukee and you want at least one good young player, and we can argue for days about whether JK is that guy or Brandon Podziemski or Moses Moody fit that level. I don't think any one of those fits the level of blue chip young talent that Shams Charania was talking about. But collectively, if you put two or three of those guys into a deal, maybe Milwaukee says, look, we can satisfy our desire for young prospects or young players that can blossom into an all-star. I don't think any of those are going to top, let's say, if Amen Thompson got put into a deal or Jalen Johnson got put into a deal. But Jalen Johnson's 24. He's not 20, 21 years old that you can look at the upside there. So Golden State Warriors are absolutely in my top tier of teams that can get Giannis right now. I don't have New York in there. I don't have it because we haven't heard the trade demand from Giannis Antetokounmpo say, I want to go to New York, and that's it. Outside of that, you are not going to see Giannis Antetokounmpo be a New York Knick. I just don't think there's any way that the Knicks can top these offers, these realistic offers from other teams like Miami. Even Miami can put in those two down the road first round picks, the 2030 and the 2032, and they can put in young players, Jaime Jaquez Jr., Khalil Ware. They can put in those guys and top. I mean, you put four assets the Miami Heat could have that would trump anything that the New York Knicks would have. So I just don't see how the Knicks are a viable destination. We see the reporting from Sam Amick and Shams Charania that say four teams are in the lead right now as suitors. It's Golden State, it's Minnesota, it's Miami, and it's New York. I would say of that lot, you're right to say Golden State has to be the front runner of those four teams because they can offer all of the things that Milwaukee would want.
Well, and that's what's interesting here is like who could compete for that? Windhorst said on Get Up this morning that Giannis has some level of interest in playing with Anthony Edwards. And this is interesting for a couple different reasons. Number one, here's what I know, Tom. Minnesota, they made an offer to Milwaukee last summer for Giannis, and Milwaukee had no interest in that. But what Minnesota is hoping for in this whole saga is that Giannis says Minnesota or nobody else. Minnesota or nothing. I'll just wait till free agency. And then in that case, Milwaukee, maybe they give Giannis what he wants. And so I don't like Minnesota doesn't have the most assets on paper to put in a deal for Giannis. They have pick swaps in 28 and 32. You know, so what? They have Rob Dillingham, who has looked like a bust so far, and Terrence Shannon, who's a good young player, but not like a big haul, and Johan Berenge, who's shown flashes as an athletic center, but he's very, very raw. And then they have Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Julius Randle. McDaniels or Reid, you know, McDaniels is 25, Naz is 26. They might be guys Milwaukee would want, but they're not a haul. Gobert, you know, he got five first-round picks when Utah traded him. He's still an elite center. Julius Randle, still an all-star caliber player despite flaws. And so maybe Minnesota wouldn't want Julius Randle or Rudy Gobert or Naz Reid or Jaden McDaniels, but maybe they would want what those players could get in a three-way scenario. And so that's what I think if Minnesota is involved with Giannis now. I don't think it's a straight-up Minnesota-Milwaukee deal. I think it would have to be a complicated three- or four-way deal where Gobert gets sent to a center-needy team and Randle gets sent somewhere else or Naz Reid gets sent somewhere else, and then those picks or assets or young players or whatever the haul is, that gets directed towards the Milwaukee Bucks. I really think that's the only way that Minnesota lands Giannis. With that said, though, Tom, like let's say the Wolves do get Giannis and they keep Rudy Gobert, who is so important to their team as a defensive player, of course. They suck on defense without him. They're great with him. Can Gobert and Giannis work to, you know, interior players, that throwback style combination? Would you see that as a combination that can contend in today's NBA?
It'd be tough, man, especially if you lose Jaden McDaniels in that deal, because I don't see how else you're going to be able to land Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, if you are getting Giannis, you're getting saying sayonara to Jaden McDaniels. There's just no way around it. I don't see how that would happen. But you're right. For Minnesota, there are a lot of questions of fit with Rudy Gobert and Giannis Antetokounmpo. At this stage of their careers, it's not like you can teach an old dog new tricks and say, hey, Giannis, go add yourself a three-point shot, or Rudy Gobert, add a three-point shot. Rudy Gobert is not adding a spacing a skill at this point in his career. It's just not going to happen. So the fit, they would be so hard to score against at the rim, but the point of attack defense suffers tremendously without Jaden McDaniels, and it's hard to ask Anthony Edwards to be a two-way superstar, right? Offensively, of course, he's going to be able to do that, but you can't demand Luka, Anthony Edwards, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to be the point of attack defender in the NBA Finals. It's just not going to happen. That's why Alex Caruso and Lou Dort exist and Cason Wallace exists for Shai over there in OKC. I would have severe questions about the viability of a Giannis-Rudy Gobert front, but to me, I just don't see Giannis demanding to go to Minnesota right now, especially if the Golden State Warriors are involved. Mm. You have the opportunity to go play with Stephen Curry and play for the Warriors and be in that situation with Steph.
Tom, here's the thing. Quick pushback. Like, yes, on paper, but Steph is old. Draymond is old. And if those guys decline or fall off, you're already old yourself. That situation could decline pretty quickly with the Warriors. Whereas if you're Giannis and you go with Anthony Edwards, who's not even in the prime of his career yet, you could be contending and take a back seat to him as you continue aging for the next 8 to 10 years. And so I think that's where, like, I look at it on the surface. I was like, yes, Golden State makes all the sense in the world. They can contend immediately. And yes, that does make a lot of sense. But so does pairing up with Anthony Edwards, who gets better every single year. This guy adds new layers to his game. And so I just think that Ant-Giannis combination would be pretty beautiful on the court. The question would be that front court aspect with Gobert and Giannis, if Minnesota could even pull that off. And I don't think Randall and McDaniels is enough value. I don't think you're going to get enough. I think it would have to be Rudy Gobert. I think Gobert is the most valuable piece of Randall, Naz Reid, McDaniels, that whole group. And if you're flipping Gobert, you need to get a center back. So like you send him to Chicago maybe, or Boston, Simons in a pile of picks, the Lakers, distant future picks. The Pacers seem like they're in on every single center right now, Okongwu types mostly, but maybe they'd be in on Gobert and set up for next year with Holly and Gobert. But ultimately, Tom, who's the center? Well, what if they got Giannis and Miles Turner? What if that's actually the way to approach it if it's Minnesota, where you're giving up Randall and Gobert and Reed and Conley, like a really massive trade?
And you're just blowing it up around Ant. Yeah. This has run its course.
Yes.
Let's really retool around Ant. And the first iteration was it did us a great job in getting us to the Western Conference at the upper echelon. Absolutely. But we want to win a title. We need to get Giannis and a center, Miles Turner, to space the floor. Miles Turner went to the NBA Finals, of course, with Tyrese Halliburton, and with Anthony Edwards, it makes it a lot more viable that he can be like a number three, number four option. As it currently stands in Milwaukee, I think Miles Turner is way in over his skis.
Oh, yeah.
And I think when you look at the talent in Minnesota, it's much better suited for Miles Turner. And look, it is a really solid core there in Minnesota, but you can see the ceiling, right? You can see the ceiling, and getting Giannis would be bursting through that ceiling and saying, we are going to swing again for the fences. It's just, until I see the trade demand to Minnesota, I won't believe it. That it's truly he is wanting to play in Minnesota. In the Western Conference, I just imagine that for Giannis Antetokounmpo going to the Western Conference, I think you would want something where you can win now and know the pieces around you. The culture in Golden State, Steph Curry and Draymond are deep into their 30s. But at least there's a culture there, an organizational championship culture. You would have to basically build that from scratch over there in Minnesota.
Back-to-back Western Conference Finals, Tom. I mean, they've had some success. Tim Conley built up Denver as well. He's built up Minnesota. You don't have it until you have it. And for Giannis, it'd be intriguing. It'd be very intriguing. I see the appeal in playing in Minnesota. And I think initially when I first heard that last summer, I was like, well, of course they're going to make an offer for Giannis, but they don't have anywhere near enough. There's no way they could pull it off. But there's always ways to get creative. And that's why I think like any trade you think up involving Minnesota, it's going to be a big one, like a pretty elaborate, involved trade, unlike with Golden State where it's those two teams can trade together. Well, I don't think it needs to be overly complicated, but you can add more if you need to.
Anthony Edwards, I mean, where would he rank in terms of co-pilots, like for Giannis? I mean, if he's looking at the chessboard right now and he's saying, who is the guy that I want to pair up with to win a title and also give me the things emotionally or legacy-wise that I want right now at my age? Anthony Edwards, as you point out, is a really compelling piece. Is Amen Thompson that guy? I don't think so.
No.
Is Alperen Şengün that guy? I don't think so.
No.
So Houston, I think, doesn't have the same kind of draw. The question is, what does Giannis Antetokounmpo think about Victor Wembanyama? What does he think about that? Because you could talk yourself into Giannis and Vic are the new Tim Duncan and David Robinson for San Antonio. As the Twin Towers, these two guys who are going to just terrorize opponents and be able to do these things that we haven't seen on a basketball court. You have Giannis and Wemby in the same front court, which would be insane. It would be unreal to watch. And you have a big Vic as a spacing big who can play outside and in. So it's not the same thing as Rudy Gobert or any questions there. And I think if you're going to tie yourself to another young star who's already got the bona fides, I know that as a franchise guy, I think it's Big Vic is number one, and Anthony Edwards in terms of viable places. It'd be tough for you to beat Anthony Edwards. I don't think the Lakers are involved. I think they're just, they don't have the assets to get
in Tom with the Lakers. Not only that, I mean, Luka Giannis fit. I'm not quite sure that's going to work necessarily. Luka is too on ball heavy. Giannis is too on ball heavy. I would hate that fit. Like, especially if I'm Giannis looking at that. Absolutely. To your point, Anthony Edwards has much greater appeal. He's an elite shooter. He's a willing mover without the ball. Sometimes he is even better off the ball willingly. It's not like he's a selfish on ball guy. He can do those things, but he can do both. That's the appeal of Ant, to your point. But I do think, like, you're right. He's the number one guy. If you're Giannis looking at the chessboard saying, I'd want to pair up with him. And Steph is up there too, despite his age, obviously. Like, I think it would be really amazing to watch Giannis and Steph together. But Anthony Edwards is number one, and Victor Wembanyama would be up there as well, except we got Tim McMahon reporting on his podcast that the Rockets and Spurs don't want Giannis, that they're not expected to make a strong offers for Giannis and Antetokounmpo. I have split thoughts on this, Tom. I think the Spurs are in a position, top of the Western Conference, top four right now. They should be aggressive with Wemby on his rookie deal. I think they should go for somebody. Maybe it's not Giannis. Like, the fit might not be perfect with those two guys, but it should be a Michael Porter Jr. It should be a Trey Murphy, somebody in that category. Add some shooting, upgrade from the Harrison Barnes spot, and I'd be willing to put Dylan Harper on the table. I would not be willing to put Stephon Castle on the table. That guy is an unbelievable defensive player. He's the new age Andre Iguodala. What he did against the Rockets last night, defending Şengün, defending Amen Thompson, defending everybody, KD on that team. He defends every position. I'm not trading Castle, but I would trade Harper. But I don't think it's a certainty that the Spurs should go for Giannis. And with Houston, to your point there, Tom, with them, the appeal for Giannis, it's probably mixed going to that situation. The Rockets just feel like a mess right now. I'm not sure Giannis would solve all their problems, and I can see why, if you're the Rockets, why you wouldn't want to go for him. Do you think that's the right choice, though, for the Rockets and the Spurs to allegedly be out on going for Giannis?
In a crazy way, this seems like a lost season, or trending towards a lost season for Houston. You go and you get KD, then Fred VanVleet tears his ACL, and then Steven Adams, who is very much the identity of your bully ball team, is out for the year. We learned this week that he's out for the year with ankle surgery.
Terrible injury, man. And terrible.
I wrote for TomTheFinder.com last week, is he might be the most valuable guy on that team for what he does, offensive rebounds, defending, screening, the energy, the leadership, all of that. He's not the best player, for sure, on that Houston Rockets team. In the same way that with the big three in Miami, we always, as covering the team, had the big parlor debate, is Chris Bosh the most valuable member of the big three in terms of the what he brings to the table? Yeah, he's not better than LeBron, not better than D-Wade, but there's, you know, redundant skill sets with D-Wade and LeBron, in the sense that you can get 80, 90% of LeBron and D-Wade if one of those guys moves out. But Chris Bosh, the fall off from Chris Bosh on the roster is so big, and you see Steven Adams being out. I just don't know how Houston can look at their title chances right now and feel anything good about it, considering they lost Fred VanVleet and Steven Adams, who were supposed to be big parts of the team this year. And so, do you go all in for Giannis, or does that feel a desperate move, not unlike what Milwaukee did by trading or signing Miles Turner? It's like, man, we got our backs against the wall. We have no other choice. KD is, you know, he's, how many years of KD do we have left where he's prime KD? We got to go for Giannis. I just don't see it. I don't see it. And I will say, Fred VanVleet and Steven Adams' contracts, if you're trying to tank, Milwaukee has a big incentive to tank here, because they still will get a lottery pick. And if, depending how bad they are going forward, they can get a top five pick, absolutely get a top five pick in a loaded draft. If you're Milwaukee and you're looking at Jimmy Butler, does Jimmy Butler pre-injury kind of backfire? It backfires on your tanking opportunity. But now that he's injured, it almost helps your value on that pick this year. Same thing with Steven Adams and Fred VanVleet, is you put those contracts into a trade for Giannis, and it does help them tank because they're not ready to play this year. But I do think that the Houston Rockets have serious questions. I mean, are you giving up Alpi or Amen Thompson in order to get Giannis? I don't see it happening.
I don't see it happening either. I don't. I mean, I think Houston would also risk becoming too old all of a sudden. If you get Giannis and KD, you go from one of the youngest teams in basketball last year to suddenly one of the oldest with a short timeline. And Houston's got a lot of problems right now, Tom. I mean, the Adams injury, Van Vliet still recovering from his torn ACL, Amen Thompson getting defended like he's Ben Simmons by the Spurs and other teams, just being ignored when he's on the perimeter. Their half-court offense looks like an utter mess. I think partially the blame is on Udoka. Partially the blame is just on the reality of this roster. And it's just a young team, and there's some issues in that roster. It's the fact that Van Vliet's out. Reed Sheppard, as much as you and I love him, Tom, I don't think he's the full answer at the point guard spot for that team. And even if, in theory, Van Vliet came back tomorrow and they had a reliable veteran, they're still 29th in the NBA in three-point attempts per game. They're still not a productive shooting team. And I got an email from one of my listeners at kocshow@yahoo.com from JM, and he had an idea. He's like, there's been plenty of speculation regarding MPJ trades. What if the Rockets traded Fred VanVleet and Dorian Finney-Smith and relinquished the swaps to the Nets for the 27 and 29 first? You know, I think MPJ is an interesting target for Houston, for sure. He'd sure as hell help their shooting issues. But I don't think just one guy is solving the problems in Houston. That's where things are with this team, Tom. It feels just like a lost season overall, but I do think you should probably try to salvage it, right? Like, the team has shown enough that they should try to do something, right?
Yeah, for sure. And MPJ, if you're going to maximize that guy, you better have a playmaker on your team that can get, you know, take advantage of his off-ball cutting abilities and hitting those shots. They just don't have that guy right now. Reed Sheppard, as much as we are big on Reed Sheppard, he's still 21 years old. Like, having him in 5 years, maybe being able to develop into that playmaker, yeah, we can talk ourselves into that. But right now, I think it's too early to expect he or Amen Thompson to be able to leverage a guy off-ball like MPJ. And so next to Jokic, he's great. And if he's a focal point of your offense in Brooklyn, now you're seeing how tough it is to have MPJ just be the A1 guy. And it's been tough sledding for Brooklyn lately, man, scoring the ball. You need a guy who's able to playmake and optimize his off-ball weapons. So I think when you look at Houston, it's going to have to take a guy like MPJ in terms of spacing. But man, how many of those guys are on the market? It's one of the reasons why I think you're seeing that word aggressive from Shams Charania and the reporting for Giannis is bring your offers now, because who else are you going to go for at the trade deadline? Who else is the guy that you're going to be able to get a star on the marketplace? And you can talk yourself into MPJ as being a star because in the Eastern Conference he might be. But I just have a hard time seeing, if Houston doesn't get Giannis right now or a guy like MPJ, it feels like they're going to drop in my title tiers down to a two-star or a one-star title tier, because I just, man, without Steven Adams and Fred VanVleet and what they bring to this team, it's just a lot of KD and Alpi, and I just don't see how that offense is going to be able to sustain itself in four rounds in the playoffs.
I don't think it would. I think that's spot on, Tom. And if you're enjoying the podcast live on YouTube, feel free to leave a comment. If we have time at the end, we'll answer some questions live on Spotify as well. Anytime you comment on YouTube, leave a comment. We always will bring stuff up, whether it's emails or comments, kocshow@yahoo.com. I always like interacting with you guys and bringing up stuff on the show as well. And we'll be right back after this break. The Rockets and Nets, that trade idea there, we'll bring that up in a second, the Rockets and Nets history as well, because I want to bring this back to Giannis, Tom, in regards to a trade idea that you and I talked about last week involving your Blazers. You know, Blazers fans, they got pretty pissed at me, Tom, because I made a post the other day on X about how, you know, Giannis has only one guaranteed season on his deal, and teams like Atlanta and Charlotte and Brooklyn and Portland, non-contenders, would be taking a massive risk giving up a lot of assets for him. And Blazers fans were like, what are you talking about? If we add Giannis to this team, we'd be awesome. We'd be contenders right away. And look, the Blazers are fun. You guys are great. Like, it's very fun to watch you guys. But I just don't think the Blazers should go for Giannis. Giannis and Dame was a horrible fit in Milwaukee. Giannis and Denny, that's a poor fit together with their downhill attacking style, too much overlap. Portland should not trade for Giannis. And I know, Tom, like, you can't talk about some of the stuff because you're on the Blazers broadcast, but I do want to mention Portland because I do think Portland should try to get involved here, because everyone talks about Atlanta, how they have the buck swap this year. There's not enough talk about how Portland has multiple swaps with the Bucks. They have an outright swap for the Bucks 2031st, and they have some very complex swaps in 2028 and 2029. So in theory, Portland could be in an advantageous position here to get involved, to get better picks. And so the fake trade that I had on my podcast last week was an elaborate deal that netted the Warriors Giannis and Jeremy Grant and Gary Trent, and then Giannis' brother Thanasis. Blazers get Kuminga, Al Horford salary filler in the deal, and the Bucks get Jimmy Butler, Buddy Hield, Trayce Jackson-Davis. And in this situation, a mix of Warriors and their own picks. And the Blazers could get some Warriors picks in this type of situation, because I just think it's worth detailing real quick here, Tom, what Portland's involvement in this whole thing could be if the Bucks want to get their own stuff back if they're trading Giannis. Because Portland has rights to first in 28, 29, and 30. Like I said, they're complex in 28 and 29. In 2028, Portland or Washington could get the Bucks first. And so if the Blazers were to trade those rights back to the Bucks, it wouldn't be some full asset recovery for the Bucks, but it would compress their risk, because that would mean that only the Wizards could swap with the Bucks, which means the Bucks would have some control over their pick that year. In 2029, currently the Portland, Boston, and Milwaukee first are in a pool together. Portland is going to get the first and third best of those picks. Washington would get the second best pick of those three. The Blazers could say to the Bucks, you get the best pick of that bunch now, assuring that if the Bucks like are still tanking then, it's their pick. And so basically the Bucks could retain priority, but not exclusivity with those 2 years. They can't get their outright pick back because of the involvement of Washington. But to pay for that ability, you know, if you're sending Giannis to Golden State or somewhere else, maybe the Blazers would rather get those picks than have the future Bucks picks. I could see this being a situation kind of like we saw with the Rockets and Nets. The Rockets got the Suns first from the Nets, and the Nets got the rights to their own first round draft picks a couple years ago when they made that trade. And like I said, Tom, I know the Blazers connection. You can't say too much here, but from Milwaukee side of things, they'd certainly see the appeal in getting their own picks back, regardless of who it's from, right? I would imagine this would be helpful if you're sending out Giannis.
Yeah, but if you look at this trade, that whether the Bucks are receiving there, don't you want to hold on to those picks? If you're, I mean, what if you're getting Jimmy Butler and Buddy Hield and Trayce Jackson-Davis in this formation? I would imagine the Blazers, and I don't have inside intel on this, but I just want to say, like, I feel like you want to, if you're Portland, you want to continue to short the team that is Jimmy Butler on their books for the next 2 years. So there's that, and then the second piece on this, I'll say, is the Blazers right
real
now.
Real quick on that, Tom. Real quick on that. You might rather have Warriors 2032 unprotected over the mixed, you know, slightly swaps with the Bucks in 28 and 29. So like that's the way I look at it. You might view that prize in 2030 or 2032 from the Warriors as more valuable than those picks in 28 and 29 with the Bucks. That's the way I look at it, to be clear.
It's eye of the beholder on that. Yes,
exactly.
I think reasonable people can disagree on, like, you're projecting the Warriors with Giannis and Antetokounmpo in 2032. What does that look like? Now, the thing that I'm looking at is, if the Blazers want to be part of this deal, I think the place that they would want to upgrade relates to this stat that I want to share with the audience here. Is when the Blazers this season have shot 33% or better from downtown. 33%, that's it. They make a third of their threes. They're 18-7 this year. The Blazers, if they get any sort of punch from downtown, make a third of their threes, they're 18-7. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, yeah, when every team is making a third of their threes, I bet they're in the same category too. Everyone improves. No, the Blazers are eighth in the NBA in win percentage when they shoot that level at from downtown. 18-7 puts them as a number eight team in the NBA if they just get some shooting. And so if you're going to get into this deal and facilitate a deal, I think the Blazers would want to upgrade their spacing and their shooting around Denny Abdia, who, by the way, has, as we've said on the show, has a descending salary over the next 3 years. So he is an incredible value. You put Giannis next to that, there are questions on the redundancy of having a downhill scorer like Denny Abdia in the same vein of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Can you have one of those guys and be an elite offense? I think so, for sure. Two of those guys, and I don't think Giannis has the three-point spacing in the same realm, in the same stratosphere as Denny Abdia, who's shooting over 40% on catch-and-shoot threes. So for me, it's questionable fit there, as you said, with Giannis and Denny. But man, if the Blazers get any shooting and being able to space, this team is so good. And I think people are sleeping on the ability of the Blazers to be a top team pretty quickly based on that stat, is that when they get just a little bit of shooting, they are an elite team in the Western Conference.
They should be seeking it out. I'm not sold on Kuminga in Portland. I just think it's intriguing because Mike Schmitz, their assistant general manager, said on draft night that Denny Avdija was the steal of the draft while they go out and get him. He said when Kuminga went number 7th, he could be the steal of the draft. He said it again during summer league. He could be the steal of the draft. Well, maybe they'll repeat history and go out and get Jonathan Kuminga as a buy low as well. Enough about Giannis. I'm sure there'll be a lot more reported. Let's talk about Ja Morant, because there hasn't been a lot that's been said about Ja in recent days. But I have five teams, Tom, that I think you can make the argument for that should be going for Ja Morant. I just want to go through those five and then get your opinion on which of those five you think make the most sense. This is my order. Number one, Sacramento. Sacramento makes the most sense to go for Ja Morant. Take a swing. You got nothing going. He's not going to bring you out of your tanking position either. You get a chance at a guy who could get a star for you. Number two, Milwaukee. Three-way, send Giannis elsewhere. Ja Morant, get some upside back. A guy who can fill the seats. I see the appeal there. Number three, Phoenix. Pretty good situation with the Suns right now. They're playing really well. They play together. There's a lot of fun energy there. If you bring Ja in, you're bringing him in with Dylan Brooks. Played some of his best basketball next to him. He could complement Devin Booker. He adds some much-needed downhill attacking on that team. Send out Jalen Green. I could see the appeal there. Miami, number four. I don't think they should go for Ja when Giannis is a possibility, but if Giannis isn't, I'd be very interested to see what Spo could do. They're playing the no-screen style, Tom, right now that Ja hated last year in Memphis, but maybe a hybrid system is something that Ja could find appeal in. And then Chicago, they need a star. Take a big swing. Maybe Ja Morant turns into that guy. And who do you think of those five, Tom? Sacramento, Milwaukee, Phoenix, Miami, and Chicago is the most sensible team that should be going for Ja Morant.
Well, as someone who lived in Miami when I was 26 years old, there's a lot of temptations in that city. Just, if I'm Miami, I gotta be sure that Ja Morant is gonna play nice and be very smart and disciplined about the off-court stuff and make sure that he's got all of the issues behind him if you're going to a city like Miami. I was there. Not that I'm the same person as Ja Morant. Just want to get that clear that I'm not saying I'm the same guy as Ja Morant. I have the same sort of interest. But Miami... Pat Riley has never
Instagram
been shy.
You love live, Tom. You love going live on Instagram, though, don't you? At 2 a.m. in the morning, right? That's your favorite thing to do in the club.
Of course. In the car, you know, if you're ever going live, you got to tell me next time we're in the car together, KFC. You're right to put Miami on the list. You're right to put Miami on the list in the sense that, like, they need a creator like that that to build around going forward. They got Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero, Norm Powell have been great for them. But take that next step. Pat Riley's always been big game hunting. I don't think Ja Morant's the guy. For me, it's Sacramento, Sacramento, Sacramento. There's just no other team that has the need for somebody to change the entire face of the franchise, to take a swing, and you're not going to be able to get a guy like Ja Morant, a talent like that, in the free agency market in Sacramento. And it just seems like everything's gotten stale over there. And that would be a definite breath of fresh air, is to bring in a guy that has that kind of off-court appeal, ticket sales. I think he's with the younger generation, I think he's a guy that Sacramento would love to have in terms of marketing and being able to build around a guy who's got some juice, right? So Ja Morant, for me, I don't see it with the Bucks, although he could help in terms of the injury this season to help their tanking and draft positioning. Suns, I'm less excited about. Devin Booker, the fit there. But like you said, defensively, they already have the pieces there in on the wing to help Ja Morant and hide him defensively. They've already got those guys. But for me, it's Sacramento. And the question is, what are you going to get back for Memphis? What are you going to get back from Sacramento? Keon Ellis, Devin Carter, first round pick. They're probably going to ask for a first round pick. I don't know if Sacramento is going to be willing to do it. I don't know if anyone is willing to do it with two more years in addition to this one at $40 million plus for Ja Morant after this. It's going to be tough to get a first round pick given all the injuries and off-court issues.
It'll be tough, but ultimately, Tom, I think with Ja, he's worth at least one first round pick despite all the issues. He's in his mid-20s. And he's in, even just as recently as a couple of weeks ago, he's had some pretty banger games, right? I mean, I think he's showing some signs of life here with what he can do. And I on the podcast, I've talked about how I think his stock is a little bit on the rise. At least it's not as down as it was early in the season. If you look at his last 12 games that he's played, it's only his last 8 games that he's played. It's a small sample size, but his numbers are a hell of a lot closer to what they were in his two all-star seasons. 28.5 points per 36 minutes compared to 29.6 points per 36 when in his two all-star years. His true shooting percentage is way back up. His shot distribution numbers are pretty much equivalent to what he was doing as an all-star. That early season 12 games when he was hurt or fake hurt and didn't want to be in Memphis and was disgruntled, I'm not saying throw it out, because that is part of the Ja Morant experience, with his moodiness and the ups and downs. But the last 8 games, he's looked a lot like Ja Morant. And so I think, considering his age and the possibility of a second prime here, if I'm the Kings, I'm definitely willing to give up a first-round pick for Ja Morant. And so far, Tom, we're, you know, a little over a week away from the deadline now, or we are 1 week away exactly, actually, from the trade deadline. I've heard the Kings have not offered a first-round pick yet for Ja Morant. I believe, according to people I've talked to, they're offering Keon Ellis and Zach LaVine, and that's that. I don't think that's enough. Well, if I'm the Grizzlies, I'm not taking that if I'm Memphis.
On that graphic, the last 8 games have taken place since November 15th. So it's been 2 months for him to get to 8 games.
December 12th over the last 8. That's when he came back.
Sure.
So it's taken a long time.
Sure, but I could say that he didn't play from November 18th to December 12th. Yes. And so you could stretch that you're getting for Ja Morant. Yeah, those numbers look great, but he's missing 31 games in that period. So I think that's the problem with Ja Morant is, like, when he's available, in this case, when he's available, he's been much better as of late. But how much of that is injury? How much of that is also stealth tanking from Memphis? Is just like, we don't want to play Ja Morant if he's not 100% healthy and risk having him get injured. And we just want to make sure that he's going to be 100% ready to go if we're going to move him potentially at the deadline. So this is a case where I think Sacramento's smart here. Is up until February 5th, I wouldn't put a first round pick and see if the Memphis Grizzlies in this game of chicken, if they veer off first, because I think when you look at the market for Ja Morant, who's going to give up that first round pick to go get that guy? And Memphis, they're going to want those type of long-term assets. And if Keon Ellis and Zach LaVine is the best you can do, man, I might just hold on to Ja Morant till the summer.
I'd hold on for sure. I mean, I think, look, the Ja has his issues, but he's worth more than Zach LaVine and Keon Ellis. And if I'm the Kings, I would 100% give up more than LaVine and Keon Ellis. I think he's worth at least one first, or at least some swaps. Put some swaps in there, right? I think something like that could have some appeal from the Memphis side at least. But even then, I might still wait and at least get one first back. But then again, Trae Young didn't go for a first, Tom. I mean, this might be the market. Like, there's just not a lot of point guard needy teams out there. And if you're Sacramento, you could also say, why would we trade for Ja when we have the third best lottery odds in a draft with Darren Peterson and Kingston Flemings, guys who could be our point guard of the future? We'll just wait for the offseason until we offer a pick. And so I see it from both sides in this situation. It's no clear-cut team for Ja Morant. But it'll be very interesting to see, of course, what happens over the next week. I was thinking, Tom, I had this idea involving MPJ. Who is going to trade for him? Where should he go? And I thought the Lakers should trade for Michael Porter Jr. The Lakers are 23rd in the NBA in three-point attempts. They're 19th in the NBA in three-point percentage. They're older. Luka, who knows with his durability, that 2032 distant future first-round pick they have could have a lot of value. And so maybe a salary filler, Dalton Connect, 2032 first-round pick to the Nets for MPJ. If I'm the Nets, maybe that 2032 down the line first would have more value than two or three mid-level first rounders. You're shaking your head, Tom. You're like, this is dumb. You're an idiot. Why'd you even think about this? Turn off the podcast. That's what you're saying.
No, I could get a lot more for MPJ, I feel like, than this.
Are you sure?
The poo-poo platter of a first round pick in Lakers when they got Luka Doncic on the team. You think this would do
What's Luka going to look like at 33 years old, Tom? Is he even going to be still playing?
He's 26.
I'm serious. Saying in 7 years.
I don't know, man. The Lakers, with the new ownership, I would be willing to bet that 2032 pick is not as valuable. Look, again, we're all projecting into the future and projecting Luka Doncic as many calf strains as he's had and the fact that he's had trouble staying in shape, that he might not be the LeBron James from Slovenia in terms of longevity here. I get that, but still, if I'm Brooklyn, I'm holding out for a better offer than that one.
About
there's
two?
No young
How about
player
two,
in there.
Tom? We're negotiating right now, Tom. How about two first? I'll make it a swap, a 2030 swap.
Okay, now you're on the phone. Now you're on the phone. We went from text messages to now we're on the phone. Okay, we're on the phone. I appreciate your offer, and I'm going to keep going to the market to see if I can get a good young player for MPJ, because what's the incentive for me to move off of MPJ right now? It's not like he's 35, you know? So I'm going to have to be bowled over with an offer. And for the Lakers, it's just, unless Austin Reeves is on that table, and I'm guessing, Mr. Pelinka, you are not willing to put Austin Reeves on the table for MPJ.
I think your point about the new ownership of the Lakers is a very good one. And that probably devalues those distant future picks in a way, because regardless of Luka, they have an ownership willing to spend, and that this should be a team that's always at least somewhat competitive, not a bottom feeder team. Some questions that I got from emailers. One of them from Douglas, Tom. He emailed, if the Celtics are buyers, they have a few trade exceptions they could use. They could keep Simons and add a salary. Something to think about. Well, I do want to address this, Douglas, because the Celtics are $7.8 million removed from the second apron. They could use their exceptions, but they can't use their big exceptions if it sends them over the second apron. And so with Boston, they are an interesting team entering the deadline. There's reporting earlier in the year. I believe it was Michael Scotto. Forgive me if I'm wrong. He said how the Celtics made an offer for Zubats. The Bulls made an offer involving Vooch. The Celtics could use a big, but they can't go over the second apron if they're using their exceptions. That said, though, Tom, involving Boston, Jason Tatum, Chris Haynes reported on Wednesday night that Tatum is reevaluating if he does want to return this season. And so with the Celtics, I'm sure Tatum's decision could play into what Boston's front office decision would be in terms of how aggressive they'd want to be this year. If Tatum's coming back, I think they got to go for it. With those exceptions, with the salaries, use all the tools you have, go for it. But if Tatum's not coming back, I wouldn't care quite as much about going for it this year. I'd rather hold on to my powder for the offseason.
Yeah, this is a really strange report. It's strange that Chris Haynes reported. It's just strange to hear from Jason Tatum or people close to Jason Tatum that this season is reportedly not something that they're looking to do, come back for this season, and he's reconsidering things. I hope that there wasn't a setback in his rehab coming back from the Achilles, because otherwise, it just seems odd to right before the deadline suggest that, hey, in 3 months, I'm not going to be ready, or at least I'm not projecting to be ready at this point. That would be a bummer. And if I'm Boston, you're right, is without Jason Tatum coming back this season, it's hard to put all your chips in the middle, add salary, when right now they're about $12 million above the tax line. They got a $40 million tax bill this season. And if you're not able to get Jason Tatum, I would imagine they're going to go the opposite direction and try to take salary out of that. So that if you add, remember, if you're above the tax line, any dollar you spend above that is going to be a multiple that you're going to have to pay in the tax. And so if you're the ownership group in Boston, Anthony Simons would be an interesting trade piece if you're going to shed salary and lower your tax bill and potentially get under the tax line by the end of the season. I would be surprised if they add significant salary, especially with Jason Tatum, you know, looking like he's not going to come back this year.
Another question, someone emailed me at kocshow@yahoo.com. Feel free to send me comments, thoughts, questions, anytime. This is from Dave. Dave said, I'm traveling solo from London to Los Angeles for the All-Star game. I've never been to either, so looking forward to making the most of it. Do you have any recommendations for restaurants and bars in Los Angeles? Tom, you are the food guy. They have a food podcast. You are a true foodie through and through. You're going to be going to James Beard events, and I mean, you're serious business here. So what's your restaurant recommendations for Dave when he's in LA for All-Star Weekend? And then I'll follow up with mine.
Yeah, so for me, I'm Top Chef all the way. So Top Chef is my favorite reality show, and I've been obsessed with that show for years. And so if you haven't listened to it yet, Pack Your Knives is my Top Chef recap show. Really excited because Top Chef is actually coming to Charlotte in the spring, my city. So really excited about this. And so the list that I have here for LA restaurants are Top Chef specific, alums of that show, chef-driven restaurants in LA. And so number one on the list for me is anything by Stephanie Izard. Girl and the Goat, which is in downtown LA, is a great option.
That place Cabra is great. Also, I love Girl and the Goat. That place is awesome.
Awesome. And Izard is a Top Chef legend and one of the best chefs in America out of Chicago.
I didn't know that. She
is Cabra, which is a Peruvian spot.
Cabra too? Wow. That place is great. Yep. I had no idea about this. That place is really good.
Lady Hawk over in West Hollywood from Charbel Hayek. He's Eastern Mediterranean food, top notch, one of the best meals you'll have in your life. Highly Likely is an all day cafe. There's three locations. From Kat Turner was on Top Chef last year, and you might see Mina Kimes at one of those places because she loves Highly Likely. She was on the pod. Mina was with when I had Kat Turner on. Awesome spot. A bunch of different places you can catch that. Highly Likely. And also 88 Club from Mei Lin, a Chinese restaurant in LA, Beverly Hills. I give you those lists, five restaurants, but definitely Stephanie Izard, Girl and the Goat. As you said, awesome spot if you're looking for a top-notch, top chef restaurant. That's my list.
Nice lighting in that restaurant too. Lighting is very important. Another restaurant I'll add to the list also, a little bit outside of downtown LA, Major Domo. It's my go-to spot in LA for nice group dinners. I love going there. Dave Chang's restaurant. Get the Bing if you go to Major Domo. Get the Bing. Get lots of little sides with that delicious bread. Go to Major Domo. That's my number one recommendation. If you're in Santa Monica or something like that, I really love Water Grill. It's the type of place to go if you don't have a reservation, but you're by the water and you need to go to a spot. Water Grill, delicious bread, delicious fish, great sushi. Everything's good at Water Grill. That's one of those easy spots. You don't need a reservation. So those are my... And then for tacos, Guisados, there's a multiple of them throughout LA, scattered throughout. That's why I give that recommendation. I'm sure a lot of great taco trucks and all that, but Guisados for a spot to go into, very, very good. So that's enough of food, Tom. For people who are watching live on YouTube, please be sure to give us a like, comment if you have any thoughts or questions about the NBA. Maybe we'll, if we have time, we'll answer some at the end here. And also give us a like if you have not done so, and subscribe. We'll be right back. Tom, let's talk about the NBA draft. I know you don't cover the draft full time, Tom, but we have a huge matchup on Saturday. AJ DiBonsa against Darren Peterson on Saturday. This is one of the biggest prospect matchups we've had in recent years. Both guys could go number one. Last time they played each other in high school, Peterson had 58 points. AJ had 49 points. I'm fired up for this. I'm clearing out my schedule on Saturday night and watching this. I'm pumped for it. Tom, how much have you watched these guys? What are your early impressions of them, whether it's your first-hand experience or conversations you've had with people around the league?
Yeah, to me, AJ DeBance is the guy for me. He's got the size. He's got a better assist rate, better steal rate than Darren Peterson, who's a few inches shorter. And you mentioned Darren Peterson could be a point guard of the future, but I'm worried about a guy who's averaging less than 2 assists per game. And even if you do a per minute assist rate for Darren Peterson, he's the lowest of those top 5 guys when we're talking about Flemings, Caleb Wilson, Cam Boozer. For me, I just watched Cam destroy my Demon Deacons the other day. And that guy, to me, is one of the best prospects I have ever seen come through into the NBA draft. Cameron Boozer, he's the youngest of those prospects, and he's also the most NBA ready, in my opinion. He's a house down there. And it's very clear when you look at the data, the best prospects are the ones that are second generation prospects. And that is Cam Boozer, another reason why I love that guy. And I would put him number one over DeBanza and Darren Peterson. To me, that matchup is so blockbuster. BYU and Kansas, for any draft Nick or any NBA scout, they're going to be packed to go watch that at the Fieldhouse. So I'm excited for this game. But for me, I got Cam Boozer number one. I got DeBanza number two. And I might even have Caleb Wilson 3 and Darren Peterson 4. But dude, wow, that guy is a bucket getter.
That's a hot take.
He's a bucket getter. I just wish I could see more well-rounded play from a guy at that size. You think he's a point guard? I have my doubts.
He's a combo. He's an on-ball and off-ball guy. I think some of his better games have been spot-up three-pointers, cuts to the rim and all that. I do think this is where the opportunity is for Peterson, where like there's skeptics. To your point, Tom, you're not the only one. If anybody who's big on the draft is listening to this, I'm sure some people are like, Tom doesn't know what he's talking about. But there are people around the league who have questions about, well, let's see it. There's plenty of people I talk to, scouts and executives around the league, who are like, I'm waiting. Well, here it is. This is the opportunity on Saturday against BYU. And then after that, on Monday, Kansas faces Texas Tech. The following Monday, they face number one Arizona. Then they face number 8 Iowa State days after that. There's some big tests coming up for Peterson to show that, A, he'll actually play and stay on the floor as he continues dealing with his hammy or whatever. And then he produces on this stage. And then same thing for AJ DeBanza. He faces number 10 Houston next week. He also has games next month against Arizona and Iowa State. These are real tests for these guys, AJ DeBanza and Darren Peterson. Peterson, for the reasons we talked about, AJ, he's had some number dips against top 100 teams. His true shooting percentage against non-top 100 teams is 61%. It drops to 53% against top 100 teams. Well, now he's going to be facing some top 10 teams, and we'll see how he thrives in those situations. Whereas, to your point, Tom, Cam Boozer, ho-hum, 24-10-4. 37% from three, good, and dominating on defense and doing a little bit of everything. Ho-hum. Cam Boozer, how boring. But maybe Cam Boozer in the end ends up being the number one pick. It's going to depend on who lands number one ultimately. I think it's going to be beauties in the eye of the beholder with DeBanza, Peterson, and Boozer.
So in the last game against Colorado, Darren Peterson really had 0 assists. This is a revelation for me. How many guys who were projected to be a combo guard just were maybe 1 or 2 assists a game? That is just, what is the comp? Like in your mind, when you see Darren Peterson play, and
Ray Allen. Early career Ray Allen, because Peterson is a very, very like vibrant off-ball player. Willing cutter, moves quick, very decisive in his movements. He has great balance, grabbing the ball from a pass. You know, it doesn't need to be perfectly on target and getting into his shot. Ray Allen's not a perfect comp, but I think it's a solid comp for some of the stuff Peterson can do. And Ray Allen could do a bit on the dribble, off the dribble as well early in his career, but he wasn't a primary creator. And so with Peterson, I think there's more to his game as a playmaker that he was able to show in high school than he has at Kansas. And again, that's why teams are like, well, show me, let's see it. And ultimately, Tom, we are at the stage here where I think the NBA tanking has only begun right now. I mean, in the NBA, you look at the lottery standings as of today on Thursday, January 29th, the Kings have lost 6 games in a row. The Nets have lost 6 in a row. The Jazz have lost 4 in a row. The Grizzlies, 4 in a row. The Bucks, 3 in a row. And those top 10 teams right now in the lottery, these are their top 4 odds you see on screen if you're watching us on YouTube. These teams want to slide. And just a quick note here, the Hawks have the rights to swap with the Bucks, so they have a 2/3 chance of ending up with a top 4 pick. Those are incredible odds as long as the Pelicans keep losing. But the Bucks, as we've talked about in regards to Giannis, they have incentive to tank to increase the probability that both of those picks end up in the top 4, or their pick at least ends up higher. Because here's the thing, Tom. It's not just one guy this year. It's not just 3 guys this year. It's not just A.J. DiBonsa. It's not just Cameron Boozer. It's not just Darren Peterson. The next 3 are really shaping together in this year's draft class. Kingston Fleming's from Houston keeps having these big games where he hits clutch shots down the stretch. He's a 3-level scoring guard, around 6'2 or so, a little bit on the smaller side, but he's sturdy, he's strong, and he gets everywhere he wants to on the floor. Perhaps the best pure point guard in the draft class. Caleb Wilson, vertical lob threat out of Carolina. In a tough situation there. They have some bad guards on the perimeter defensively that makes things hard on him on the back line, but he's versatile. He's tough. He's a lob guy. He can handle the ball a bit as well. And then Keaton Wagler from Illinois, a newcomer here. He was a 4-star recruit. And all season long, he looked like this 3-and-D-plus guy. Knockdown shooter, versatile defender at 6'6", who can do some pick and roll and handle the ball a bit. But as the season's progressed, he's had more and more flashes where it's like, well, he's not a second-rounder. He's a late-lottery guy. Oh, he's not a late-lottery guy. He's a mid-first. Well, he's not a mid-first. Maybe he's in the top 5 after he had 46 points against Purdue, scoring up against all of their really good defenders, against smaller guys, bigger guys, wings, it didn't matter, getting buckets at the rim, from mid-range, from 3, off the catch, off the dribble. And it's like Peterson and AJ and Boozer are the prizes this year, but there's some amazing consolations for those teams that don't land in the top 3. And I talked to a GM recently, Tom, who said he thinks the depth of this draft is going to be historic. I don't disagree with him. I really think there's a chance here that this is one of those historic draft classes. And as the year develops, more and more guys like Wagler, like Flemings, are really coming along where it's like, wow, get us into the top 6, not just the top 3.
Well, that's why this 7-10 in the draft lottery odds is so crazy.
Yes.
The tanking is going to be nuts in this, because if you are 7th, you have a 7% chance at winning the number 1 overall pick. But if you're 10th, you're 3%. So you can double your odds at winning the number 1 overall pick. And I'll just add, the Milwaukee Bucks can't land the number 1 overall pick because they get the least favorable of the New Orleans and Milwaukee pick. And New Orleans can, no matter what happens, they're not going to get their pick because it's going to Atlanta. So if Milwaukee gets to the 7th spot there, they could potentially land the number 1 overall pick. Atlanta takes it, but then they still get whatever New Orleans is at. So they could, at the 7th slot, end up with a top 2, top 3, top 4 pick. And yeah, they can't get number 1, but they're separated in the standings. This is why this is so key for people to listen. The 7 and the 10 slot in the draft lottery odds are separated by a game and a half. You got 7, Memphis, at 18-27, same record as Milwaukee. Then you got Dallas at 19-28. And then you got Charlotte, who look like the Carolina Panthers all of a sudden, just making a run here where they're like, wait, are we a playoff team right now? I just watched them the other day. They beat The Philadelphia 76ers, they're up by 50 at one point, which is the second time that the Hornets were up by 50 on a team in January. They look awesome lately, but Charlotte's at 10 and they're 20 and 28. And so by going from the seventh slot to the 10th slot, they just halved their chances of a top four pick and the number one overall pick. So it's really interesting what Charlotte is doing right now, given that Con Knipple is NBA ready as they come in this draft class. They're playing really good basketball, and they might be saying, all right, well, we did lose about half the ping pong balls by going from 7 to 10, but with this team playing right now, we're okay with that, because the way that they're playing, you need to see it if you're Charlotte fans. You need to see some good basketball, and they're playing great right now. But it's really that 7 to 10 that they're jockeying for ping pong balls, game 1.5 game separation from 7 to 10, and that is a huge swing in lottery odds.
100%, Tom. I mean, that's the thing with flattening the odds. The NBA, this when they did that, they created a situation in which, yes, you don't need to bottom out to get the 25% odds at number one with the worst record as it was before, but you might tank out of the play-in. I mean, like, if you're a Charlotte Hornets fan right now, to your point, Tom, you've won four games in a row and, you know, vibes are good, but it's like, whoa, wait a minute here. We don't want to make the play-in by accident and then accidentally make the playoffs. We don't want that to happen. Well, let's wait a second here. And so I think you're going to see some of those teams like tank late to try to get out of that play-in. But ultimately, like, it might be too much. Like for your Blazers, if they wanted to, it's 3.5 games of separation from Dallas and Memphis now. Memphis is on the downswing. I don't think you're going to catch them. It's, you know, if the Warriors wanted to, you're 7 games separated. You know, you're not going to do that. If you're in the Eastern Conference, if you're Atlanta or you're Chicago, you're 4 games separated from the Bucks and you're 10 games separated from the Nets. There's only so much you can fall. And so some of these teams, it's more, as you said, jockeying for positioning. And that's what you're going to see them do, where they're competing with teams in their range. But, I mean, I think this draft class is special. I can't wait till this weekend and this big run of games we have coming up with a lot of very, very difficult matchups, Tom. We did get a couple comments in the live YouTube chat that I wanted to address before we get out of here, Tom. From Eric Weiss, he said, Ja is a salary dump like Trey. I think this is worth circling back to, considering our conversation about, well, what is Trey worth and what would a team actually give up to go get him? This could be the case that Ja is just a salary dump. I mean, that could just be the reality here, and that they're not going to get a pick, just like the Hawks did it for Trae Young, and deal with it, Memphis. But I do think Ja's worth a little bit more with Trae, more than Trae, personally.
Yeah, I could smell that one a mile away when Trae got dealt. It's just like, he's not going to play. He's not going to play for Washington because it's the perfect tanking commander. You got a guy who's injured, a guy who's got a player option for next year, and maybe he can get a contract extension. And I think all of those reasons, they get a guy. CJ McCollum was too good for the Wizards. Too good. They had won, what, a 5 out of 7 with CJ balling out there right before he got traded. And so I think with Ja, it's the similar thing where I think he might be more valuable as a salary dump to a team that wants to get into the AJ DeBanta and Darren Peterson sweepstakes than it is actually a guy that you can rely on for a playoff run. So it really is sad that Ja Morant was one of the most exciting, most box office hits in basketball, and now just a couple years later is turning into a salary dump with 2 more years left on his deal. There's just a lot of negative value on that contract, and Trae Young only had 1 player option year left, and with Ja Morant, it's this year and then 2+ with no player option. So it's going to be tough to get a first round pick, but like you said, maybe a second gets thrown in there. But I think it's a testament to his lack of durability and lack of positive impact on both ends of the floor why you might not see Ja Morant in his prime not even get a first round pick.
From Jordan, he said, John Horst has a fiduciary responsibility to the Bucks that exceed loyalty to one specific player. Don't know if I pronounced that correctly. I got coup wrong last week when I said coop, as some Spotify commenters got on my ass about, rightfully so. but I'm some words just, they go in my brain, Tom, and I just, they come out a different way. But fiduciary, I believe that is the proper pronunciation for what it Jordan
is.
Said.
It is. You nailed it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. And Jordan's 100% correct about John Horst. And I agree here. I think in regards to our conversation we had earlier, Tom, when you said Atlanta should go for Giannis, and I said maybe it's a surprise team. I know he won the title. I know he's your greatest player in franchise history. But the Bucks need to find the best offer, period. End of story. That's that. They need to think yep. about themselves and build this forward. You can't be a team that's at the bottom of the NBA for the next 7 years without the rights to your own picks. You got to do what's best for you. And what is that? Getting as much as you can. If the best team that makes an offer is a team that Giannis doesn't want to go to, that's their risk. And Giannis can leave in a year and a half if he wants to. But you got to go get the best offer. You got to think about yourself.
You do. And I know I'm going to sound like a homer here with the Blazers, but that's what the Blazers did with Dame Lillard a couple years ago, is they got the best deal on the table, and look at what they got. Think about what the assets they got in that deal. In that Damian Lillard trade with Milwaukee and then the Phoenix and then the Malcolm Brogdon trade that they flipped to get Denny Avdija, they got Tomani Kamara, Denny Avdija, who's all NBA talent this season on the best non-rookie contract in the league, and they got the Milwaukee 2029 and the swap in 2028 and the swap in 2030 with Milwaukee. That's why you hold out for the best deal possible. And look, Damian Lillard was the Giannis for the Blazers, and you see it come full circle. Well, now Damian Lillard's in Portland, and of course Drew Holiday that they traded for is also back in Portland. So the NBA is crazy, man, and things change quickly, but you have to do right by your organization, get the best offer possible. And yes, it was painful for the Blazers to move on from Damian Lillard, but ultimately they held out for the best possible offer, and now look at them and where they are with their future assets.
I think that is spot on, Tom. And I, you know, even to this day, I still have some Heat fans in my mentions like, oh, look how smart Portland looks now. It's like, what are you talking about? That offer was better at the time than what Miami made for Dame, and it looks even better today than what that Miami offer looked like at the time. I mean, you can have Hamayakas and his 31% on a shot per game from three. Enjoy. Sorry, Heat fans. From Samuel in the chat, last one here, Tom. He said, hi, both of you guys. Loving the show. I'm from the UK, and I've been following the NBA the last few years and want to start supporting a team. Any tips for picking a team to follow? You can't say the Blazers, Tom.
Pretty good, though. Pretty good.
The Blazers would be a great choice. It would be a great choice. I would agree with that. But besides the Blazers, who's a team? Right,
besides the city that I live in, besides that one, too, because I'll just throw that out there, too.
Besides the Hornets, besides the Blazers, those two teams, I arguably, no bias here. If you want to pick like a non-big market team, Charlotte and Portland are probably at the top of the list right now for bright future teams, fun teams to latch on to. So if you're Samuel, I think those two teams would be up there. But besides them.
besides those two, which are pretty good picks, yeah. I would say going forward, look, if you're from UK and you're from Europe, you could do worse than the San Antonio Spurs. Before the season, the bandwagon was empty. Now it's pretty much full, but I would also say you want a mix of just different stories and things that you can latch onto, because the NBA is a turnover league. There's a lot of turnover in the league. So look at the organization, the way that they're run. And if you vibe with that and you like the way that they're run, that's going to sustain your fandom over time, because there's so much turnover in the league that it's hard to just latch onto one player. And that's the tough thing about a player empowerment era is, you know, a lot of times if you're looking for a team to root for, that team's going to look very different in a couple years. So if they have the right bones to the organization, like I think right now Utah is a really interesting team to go long term with. Get on the bandwagon now. I think with Ace Bailey and with Keontae George and Will Hardy as the coach and Danny Ainge and Austin Ainge running the show there, I kind of feel like if you're going to get in now at the ground floor or something, Utah is a really interesting team.
I'm with you, Tom. I think Utah would be up there for sure. I think many moons ago, back on my old pod with Chris Vernon, the mismatch, I had the Bright Future Suns before they became a team that made the NBA finals. The Suns right now, I think, are one of those brightish futures. They're good right now. They're 28-19. They're currently the seventh seed in the West. They don't have a lot of future draft capital, so they're not, the future's not quite as bright. But the Suns are a fun team, and they got an owner willing to spend. They got a good coach. They have Devin Booker. The Suns, if you don't want to pick one of the brightest future teams, I'd say Phoenix would be in there as well. But ultimately, I mean, I'd say for Samuel or anybody else who doesn't have a team, but they want a team, I know we have a lot of international listeners. I would just like look at, do you want a young team? Do you like watching young players get better? Do you like to watch a team that's a veteran, like laden team, and that they're competitive right now? I tend to lean towards the younger on the up and up teams, the Portlands, the Charlottes, the Utahs, a team like that I would latch onto. Or maybe it's a city you want to visit in the United States as well. I'd think about that. Where's a state you want to visit? Do you want big, beautiful mountains? Utah, maybe, right? Do you want a cool city? Well, maybe just pick the Knicks or the Nets, right? Maybe that's what you do. But ultimately, just find out what appeals to you and then choose that team and then root for them. And plus, you'll have the NBA Europe League at some point soon, Tom. So you'll have a local team as well, potentially, to root for as well. Tom, this was a hell of a lot of fun. We got the trade deadline a week from today. I feel like it's really snuck up on us. February 5th is 1 week from today already. It's already January 29th. I mean, everything always goes by fast as you get older, but 1 week till the deadline. Do you think we're going to have fireworks? Is this going to be a big, crazy deadline? Or on Thursday when we record together live after the deadline, or live before the deadline, if something big happens, do you think it might just be a dud? What do you think is going to happen?
I think it's fireworks, man. Check in. We're going to do a live show on the trade deadline day on Thursday. We'll be right here on Yahoo NBA. Go subscribe to that channel, because I think there's going to be fireworks, and I think you're going to see Giannis with a new team. I think he played his last game in Milwaukee. We'll see which one he actually is moving into that home, because he's ready for a new home, which home he's going to be playing for, because I do think he gets moved at the deadline. I might be wrong about that, but we will, I think, be discussing Giannis's new team this time next week here at Yahoo NBA.
Yes, absolutely. And please be sure to subscribe as well and set the notifications, hit the bell if you want to get notified of live shows, because if something big happens, there's a chance we just go live right away, whether it's a big rumor that drops or whether it's an actual trade that occurs. And my show is live every Thursday. You and I, Tom, we go live. Your show went live yesterday. The big number, Dunker Spot, is on here with Nikias and Steve twice a week as well. We get other videos as well. So please be sure to subscribe to Yahoo NBA if you've not done so already. Thank you, everybody, watching us live on YouTube. Appreciate it. Have a good day, guys. Enjoy all the trade reports and trade rumors out there in the NBA now.